Hello, this is Tony DiVolfo, the Carlton Football Club. I'm speaking to you today from the Bruce Dool Media Room in what is the latest Carlton FC podcast. Today's guest was an integral member of Carlton's famed Mosquito Fleet through those powerhouse teams of the late 1970s, mid-1980s. Recruited to the club from Thomastown, he was one of four first gamers for Carlton's opening round of the 1979 season, together with Wayne Johnston, Robert Klomp and Peter Francis, all of whom were destined for premiership glory. In this man's case, three premierships came his way. In 1979, under the watch of Alex Jesolenko, and then in 1981-82, the back-to-back years under coach David Parkin. He represented Carlton a record 134 times in the number 34 Guernsey, formerly worn by triple premiership player Ian Robinson and now by Nick Dygan. He also finished in the top 10 in his club's best and fairest on four occasions, and three times he donned the big V for Victoria. His playing career would come to an end after a further 24 games and two seasons with St Kilda, but home is where the heart is, and he is without doubt a Carlton man. He is Alex Marcou, and Alex, welcome back to the club.
Thanks, Tony.
Alex, it's fair to say you haven't really left, because I know that you do a little bit of work for the spirit of Carlton. It's obviously something you enjoy being part of.
Tony, I love it. It started 5-6 years ago when the club was in a bit of turmoil. A few of us got together. I didn't, but, you know, the Parkins, the Wallses, the McClures, they all banded together and started Spirit of Carlton. I was on the Carlton Past Players Committee with Chris Pavlo. Then we all got together and helped the club raise nearly $500,000 in those 5 years for gym equipment. We also helped with the past players in a lot of guys that are struggling. You know, we'll help them with a bit of money from time to time. Yeah, but I love it. I love it.
That's a good news story. And doesn't the game need it in this day and age? That's for sure. It's
good
to hear.
Yeah.
Now, Alex, I want to take you right back to the early days. And I want you to begin by telling the listeners a little bit about your heritage, the Macedonian connection. I understand both your father and mother were born in Macedonia.
Yeah, well, Tony, if Greeks were listening to this now, they would be spewing. And with all due respect to everyone, I don't want to cause any, you know, grief in Greek heritage or Macedonian heritage. Technically, my mum and dad came from the top of Greece, as it's called. Their passport is Greek, so a lot of the Greeks would probably say out there now, oh, you're bloody Greek, you're Greek. Unfortunately, or not unfortunately, but at home we spoke Macedonian, and my parents brought me up as a Macedonian. So I'm Macedonian. My mum and dad from a little village called Neret, N-E-R-E-T. There was no sport played there. My dad, at the age of 7, was a shepherd. He used to take the goats and the sheep up into the mountains by himself with wolves and bears. And you know, he was telling me the story. It was unbelievable. And he'd stay out at night. Now, at 7 years old, you know, how many kids here would do something like that? So he'd do that and protect the sheep, which was their livelihood, and the goats, and then bring them back down after they've had a feed up in the mountains. So that was probably the closest he ever got to having a bit of sporting prowess, really.
An incredible story. And can you tell us a little bit about that place your father came from? Have you been back there? Have you visited the place, or would you like to go there?
Yeah, one day I would, Tony. My second oldest brother, Simon, went there, and the village was about 700 people when my mum and dad left. There's probably... He said there's 200 people living there. It's a bit dilapidated. He goes, it's beautiful. It's in the mountains. He goes, it's sensational. Alex, one day you just got to go back. I would love to go back. Yeah, one day I might, yeah.
What age were your mother and father when they came to Australia?
Yeah, my dad was 16. He came here in 1948, and my mum was 17, 18. She'd been shipped out of the village because there was a civil war between the Greeks and the Macedonians at that stage, and there was a lot of raping and pillaging, and she got shipped off to Czechoslovakia. Her mother didn't see my mother for about 20 years, so she was in an orphanage in the Budapest in Czechoslovakia and lived there until she was about 16. And then my grandfather bought out her. Her sister was in Hungary. That got separated everywhere because of, you know, the fear of being killed and raped.
I don't know whether you've been asked the question before about your family background to this extent, but I know that I've had a conversation similar to this with Tony Liberatore, and he told me that every game that he played for Footscray, the Western Bulldogs, he dedicated to his mother and father because he knew the hardships that they had had to endure to get him to the position where he was playing league football. Does that resonate with you? Do you appreciate what he says there?
Oh, absolutely. I've probably been, again, ignorant. I didn't think of it that way. I was wrapped to just run out onto the ground with a Carlton Guernsey on. I knew my mother and father were always there in the same spot, the Heatley stand near the race with all the friends around. And to this day now, I still bump into people that used to sit with my mum and dad and say, oh, how are they going? And since then, my dad's passed away. But, yeah, I should have been a bit more like Tony and, you know, probably ran out on the ground and thought, here, this is one for you. And but I did, in the grand finals, I did look up into the stand and say, mum and dad.
We'll get to the grand final shortly. It's a great story you tell. But I'd like to ask you about the days in Thomastown. I mean, you mentioned that, you know, the language, not necessarily English, was spoken in the house. How does a kid from that sort of background in that area at that time end up playing Australian rules football?
Tony, I went to Laylor Primary School, and at the age of 5 had no idea of English. We only spoke Macedonian at home. Went to school and I was taught English there, and my dad was a mad Fitzroy supporter, so we would go to the football. He would take me to the football, to the Brunswick Street Oval, to watch the Norm Browns, the Crows.
Kevin Murray,
Lazarus, Gary Lazarus, all those guys. And I used to love Fitzroy, and I used to love VFL football at the time. And then I started playing it with my younger brother, Simon, kicking in the backyard. And my dad always said to me, he goes, I always knew you were going to be a footballer, because from the time you'd get up in the morning, you'd get that ball and you'd go out in the back, whether it was summer, winter, cold, in your bare feet, just kicking this ball around. And he said, I thought you'd, you know, get to good heights with it. I started playing state school football at Laylor State, and then from there, a few mates played in state school championships and stuff like that, and then went to Laylor High, and a few of the guys started playing football at Thomastown. And because, you know, your mates and social pressure and this and that, said, no, don't worry about playing at Laylor Football Club, where Cooter came from. I went to Thomastown, where Glazer came from.
Glazer would have been a bit later than you?
Yeah, a bit later. Yeah, a couple of years later.
Okay, so you're in the system and you got to learn how to play the game. Were you always that sort of elusive, quick, you know, speedy type player?
Yeah, all along. It was just, my speed got me out of a lot of trouble. My speed got me to the ball before a lot of other guys. Yeah, and it was sort of easier to get a kick in those days.
Did it get you out of trouble off the field as well, or were you a good boy?
No, I was a good boy off the field. I was a very good boy off the field.
Now, Alex, what about the Carlton connection? I mean, I think it was 1978 that was your first season here. How did you come to Carlton? I presume it was zoning, but what was the circumstance?
Yeah, Tony, I was at Thomastown in 76. Newton Chandler at the time come and saw me, and he said to Chrissy Pavlo, you got to get this bloke. He's going to be a good footballer for the Carlton Footy Club. So Chrissy Pavlo kept knocking on my mum and dad's door, and my dad turned around to him and said, look, Chris, and they started speaking in Greek, which my dad, you know, felt more comfortable with. And he said to Chris, he said, I want him to play in the under-19s. If he's going to come down there, I want him not to get lost in the under-19s. I want him to play in the reserves. And Chris came back a couple of weeks later and said, you've got your wish. Yeah, the first game he plays in the reserves. 1977, we're playing the Swannies out here. and I'll never forget, it was Peter Francis, myself, were told we're playing in the reserves, and at the time, to play reserves, you'd have about 25,000 people there. Running onto the ground with 25,000 people was unbelievable. I thought, you know, this is, and I'll, to this day, I've never forgotten it. And we both kicked a couple of goals, and we thought, how good is this going to be? Well, a couple of weeks later, guess where I was, under 19s, because I couldn't get a kick. And got my groin injured, and I just thought to myself, what am I doing here? Like, you know, there's the South Viz, the Jezelenkos, City Jackson, Dooley's. I thought, nah, this isn't it. No, I shouldn't be here. So I went back to Thomastown, and the footy club rang me and said, what are you doing? You know, you need rehabilitation. You need us to look after you. You know, where are you? That was Chris Pavlo, and I said, look, I don't feel like I should be there. He goes, Alex, for God's sake, get back here. Let us rehabilitate you. We'll give you another go in 78, because my groin, I'd really stuffed it up. So end of 77, I did a lot of pre-season, and 78, played reserves for the whole year and won the best and fairest.
Incredible performance to do that. You mentioned Chris Pavlo, the late Chris Pavlo, you know, a former player, committeeman, coach, did it all at Carlton, led up the past players for many years. Obviously, he was something of a father figure to you.
Yeah, he was, him, sorry, Tony, and I got to mention this other guy too, Arthur Moxon, who was a recruiter. You know, these guys at that stage, the amount of work they did and travel and look at players for nothing. You know, they did it all for nothing because of the love of the club. They were my both father figures, Arthur Moxon and Chrissy Pavlo was sensational. He looked after me brilliantly.
Now, we know that under the current rules that players from anywhere could be recruited to Carlton, but back then, I guess it was very territorial. In saying that, was it a long way for you as a junior to make the trek in from Thomastown to Carlton? How did you get here?
My dad used to bring me when I was about 17, and then I got my license, so it was easier to come in. At 78, I think I was, hang on, 78, what was I, about 20? Yeah, I was out of license, I was right.
And one question about the 78 season again. Sergio Silvani, I think, was your coach in that particular year. What impact did he have on your early formative years?
See, he was, again, sensational, and he, probably because from a European background, he helped, you know, me a little bit more to get a bit of confidence, to get a bit of skill, you know, just to stand up tall, because, you know, I still felt a little bit inferior to the point where I didn't find out till about 5 years later, at the end of 78, they were going to trade me to Essendon, and Serge Silvani got up in front of the committee, and he was very well respected then, and said, if he goes, I go. He goes, this kid's going to be a good footballer for the footy club. I want him to stay. And, you know, I didn't know that until, and Serge never told me that. Someone else told me a few years later.
I'd love to know who the Essendon player was.
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah.
It would have been pretty good, but however, thankfully sanity prevailed, Alex, and you stayed put. We moved to 1979, a massive year for yourself and the club. You actually made your senior debut in the first round of that year, which by a quirk of the draw was actually round three. It was the third, you played in round three, but it was the first game for the club. And I think you were named in a pocket alongside Rod Gault, and you actually had a fairly auspicious debut. I think you kicked a couple of goals.
Yeah, three goals.
Three goals in that game.
Yeah.
What are your overriding memories of that day?
Oh, it was out at Waverley. It was, there was about 60, 70,000 people. It was against Essendon. And I just thought, unbelievable, you know, to don that Carlton jumper and to be playing with the Dooleys, the Jezelenkos. It was an amazing feeling. And to kick a few goals, fantastic.
And, of course, the year went on, and, I mean, you know, it proved such a fantastic year for the team. I've spoken to Wayne Harms often about 79, and he said a lot of players that year played out of fear because of the stringent training regimen that Jezza set. If you didn't perform, you paid for it on the track. Was that the case?
Tony, absolutely. He was probably the hardest taskmaster I've ever had in coaches, but he did do it because he thought himself, we were a very, very talented side, but a bit lazy, and not so much the younger guys, but more the older guys, and he just wanted to get it into our mind, you can't win games unless you're really mentally tough and physically tough, and he worked us. I could tell you stories, and I told Cooter and Christy one day, and he couldn't believe the training regime after a loss against Geelong, and he, I used to have a couple of drinks with Jezza, and I think he got a little bit with the fallout with Harris. He, to this day now, still believes if he was here, he would never have trained us as hard as he did in 79, but he still believes that he would have probably won four in a row. He, to this day, still believes that. And I probably believe him too.
We'll get to 1980 and happened soon, but 79, I mean, you finished the home and aways, I think it was two games clear in top spot. I think you then accounted for North in one of the semis. I think it was final five then, so you go straight through to the grand final. And you struck, it was a wet deck, and it was the whips were cracking against Collingwood. It was a tight game.
Yeah.
Running out grand final day, do you remember that moment and what it feels like to run out onto the MCG in front of 100,000 people?
Yeah, Jezalinko said to the young kids especially, he said to the Harmsies, myself, Buckley, Sheldon, he said, look, guys, you'll never experience this, home and away and crowds. This is, you're going to be absolutely starstruck here. And I'll remember, and the Harmsie was next to me, we've run out, and I basically stopped dead in my tracks. There's 115,000 people screaming and roaring. And Harmsie was next to me, and I still remember Jezza coming up and slapping us against the across the face. Not hard, but just saying, boys, get your head right. Enjoy, but you're here to play. And I to this day, I still remember that running out there. It was unbelievable.
It's amazing the little things you remember. Jezza was obviously an influence.
Jezza, people say he wasn't a good coach, and everyone's got their own opinion. For me, he, at the start of the year, pulled me aside and said, look, they all reckon you're too small to play. That's why you weren't played in 78. I'm going to give you a chance. I'm going to play you. Don't let me down. And, of course, he's one of my great sort of instigators.
And it's really interesting to hear how there were those pivotal moments with Silvani and then Jezalenko, stressing those points, at those particular moments in time. Had they not done that, you might have ended up back at Thomastown.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just some things, I know a luck's not, you shouldn't say luck, but I'll tell you what, if you got someone who's got a lot of confidence in you and they're pushing you along, it helps a lot.
The Harms incident, that we all remember the famous moment, deep into the last quarter of that grand final. Where were you, and did you have a good view of what actually happened, and did you understand what had happened?
I was on the half-forward flank, Tony. What Harms did, it was like a split second. He's kicked the ball, and next minute he's run after it, and then he's tapped it in, and to Sheldon, and he's kicked the goal that basically sealed the game for us. And I'm just going, I can't believe he did that. Like, it was so quick and mud, where, it was mud, not like these days, it's bowling greens.
And do you remember siren time, how you felt that moment, sheer elation, obviously.
Sheer elation. It was, Collingwood had the ball, they were attacking, and I was thinking, oh my God, I hope the siren goes, and they'd come around the half-forward flank. I think Ray Shaw had it. Around our half-back flank, their half-back flank, and the siren had gone. And I thought, we got it.
And you mentioned your mother and father would have been there to see all those triumphs, 79, 81, 82.
Yep.
What a great thing, in retrospect, that they were there to be part of that success.
Sensational. They had as much jubilation, Tony, as I did. All my stuff, all my medals, everything, they've got everything. And they proudly, have got them in their house. I will never take them off them, that's part of them. because they help.
Absolutely. Now, 1980, tumultuous events over 79-80. We saw Jezolenko, George Harris out, Ian Rice, Peter Jones in, president and coach respectively. From a playing perspective, what was your take on it? You remember, were the players kept out of it? How did it pan out?
Yeah, kept out of it. I don't think we even went to the AGM at Festival Hall. But after that happened, we were all, shocked because, we loved Jezza so much. As much as he was a hard taskmaster, he made the basis of the success because he got the older blokes to mix with the younger blokes and the younger blokes to mix with the older blokes and the wives, the girlfriends. That was just one big family. And when that happened, we carried on, but we lost a big part of it.
Now, Peter Jones, as I said, took over. In 1980, people perhaps forget that Carlton actually finished that season, I think minor premiers, two games clear.
Yeah.
So they were in good shape going into the final series, and yet they went out in straight sets. What do you think happened?
I think we had a few injuries, which you never play with injuries. I think... I don't think Percy got the best out of us for the finals. I think our minds weren't right. We were two games clear. We should have had someone there to lead us up the path to win another one. We should have, but...
Yeah. And in retrospect, is what Jezza said right, that maybe it did cost the team four?
He, to this day, still believes that.
Do you believe that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do.
Maybe the one that got away.
Maybe the one that got away, yeah.
Now, David Parkin, of course, was appointed Peter Jones' successor, and that heralded in another great period for the Carlton team, back-to-back premierships, 81-82. David Parkin, the coach, what's your take on him?
Probably the greatest tactician, speaker, and coach. Jezza was my biggest influence, if people ask me, but as a coach, from top to bottom, Parker was number one.
Do you think that group of players, that special group of players that were there for that whole journey, do you reckon as time went on and win was penciled in after win, that that group developed an air of invincibility about the way it approached each game?
Yeah, I would say that, Tony. We had belief in each other. We had confidence in each other, and we knew we were never beaten, like ever beaten. Like we would always come back. We could always come back if we really wanted to. We lost games, but the premiership quarter, the third quarter, we used to go out there and you talk to supporters and a couple of guys that I work with now, who are mad Carlton. They used to say to me, even at halftime, you're 5-6 goals down. We knew third quarter you can come out there and just blow the other side off the park. And we used to be able to do that.
And, of course, the team stood up in September also. Do you think that there was also an unwritten rule amongst the players themselves that at Carlton you hadn't really arrived as a player until you played well in finals?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and if you look through all the... You look at every name that ever played for Carlton in those finals, you wouldn't pick one guy that... never stood up. Yep.
Now, in 81, Alex, the team finished top, but by percentage only from Collingwood, and it then accounted for Geelong in that famous final at Waverley. Yep. The Buzz completed
the
mark of the year, goal of the year, double with that goal of the year. Do you remember that particular moment?
Absolutely.
I personally was there, and I can remember I've never before or since seen people offer a standing ovation for a player for a moment, but it happened that day. What do you remember of it?
Yeah, well, exactly what you said, Tony. He was unbelievable. Buzzer was was a freak. He had six senses. He knew where you were. The amount of goals I got off him, he'd tap it under his leg or he'd do something. He knew where you were. The skill level of him, everything was sensational. He was a very good player.
It's a shame history, developed the way it was. He had to go back and it probably cost him, the greater part of his career as a player here. But he was He was, for that period of time, absolutely...
Dynamite.
Dynamite as a player, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
You faced Collingwood again in the grand final of 81. It was, again, a tight struggle for three quarters, and there was a moment, you know, going into time on the third where it looked like, geez, the unthinkable is going to happen here, and yet there were two very quick goals in time on, and really the team overran Collingwood in the final quarter, ran out comfortable winners.
20-point winners. Asher kicked the goal, I think, from memory, and then Buckley kicked one, Jimmy kicked one, and you could see the Collingwood head, and Jimmy was, talk about another little leader, a little dynamo. He were coming into the three-quarter huddle, and he's screaming at the top of his voice, have a look at them, their heads are down, they are gone, we're going to win this, and he kept going and going, and we just started looking at them, and they're going to their huddle, and their heads are down, and we've come back from, you know, they were fairly well ahead of us at that stage. I think we're about 6 or 7 points down or something like that. And we ran out into the last quarter, but he could sense it. And he got us all fired up too.
Prior to that happening, did you fear the worst though?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, they were all over us. And, you know, again, being the side we were and the confidence in each other and the work ethic we all had for each other and we would bleed for each other, you know, showed true at the end.
Now, we'll get to 82, but there's one question I do want to ask. If you were a selector at Carlton and you had to pick from fellows in that Mosquito fleet, like Harms, Johnson, Sheldon, Buckley, who would you pick first?
Oh, that's a hard one. Harmsy, I would say, pound for pound, was one of the best players I've ever seen in my life. You could put him anywhere, centre-half forward, and we used to play him centre-half forward, and he used to dominate a game. You'd put him back line, you'd dominate. Jeez. I would have to say, Harmsy. Then you got Buckley. Buckley would give his body for you, how tough he was, and how much of a inspiration. That's a hard one.
Question without notice, Alex, so I apologise for that. Now, 1982, you finished the home and away's third, for memory. You won the qualifying final comfortably against Hawthorn, lost to Richmond in the second semi, and then beat Hawthorn in the prelim to get another crack at Richmond. As opposed to 79-81, it was a bit more difficult, a road to get to that last day, but... You know, in saying that, it was one of the great wins, the only two grand final, in a great grand final too.
Yeah. Tony, Richmond beat us by 12 goals, I think. And to this day now, Jeff Raines has never forgotten the loss in 82. They thought they were going to win it hands down. That's what was probably their worst thing because they thought, and they'd come to watch us play in the preliminary final against Hawthorn. And I think it's one of the toughest games out at Waverley, the Hawthorn-Carlton preliminary final of 82. If you look at it now, just the speed, the physical intensity of it, at half time there's about two goals kicked on either side. It was one of the toughest games and we've come off the ground. We've won it and come off the ground thinking, how in the hell are we going to play a grand final? That's how physically wasted we were. And then to come out against Richmond in the 82... And again, physically, very, very tough game. I watched it. I haven't watched it for about 20 years, and I watched it the other night. I thought this was a physical, tough, sort of wet game. And to win that was, you know, like you said, you know, we were probably underdogs and should never have won it.
I was very fortunate, Alex, that day to be in the press box covering the game. I was sitting next to the timekeepers, and that goal, I've told you this before, the goal that you kicked in the last quarter, the sealer, it actually went dead centre, and I was basically behind you, and so I had that clear light, and I don't think I've ever seen a ball bisect the goals as well as that one did. That must have been a great moment for you, because that was the cruncher. It was the one that the goal that won Carlton the premiership.
Yeah. And again, I'll mention Jimmy Buckley, McClure for the outstanding work he did. You know, again, McClure. You know, they talk about centre-half forwards. He's one of the greatest ever for the work ethic. You know, people don't realise how good he was. And you go, we're talking about all these players that played finals and played in my era. You could not knock one saying he wasn't any good. They were all unbelievable. But to knock it out and to kick that goal, I was jumping out of my skin, and Buckley, I can hear him behind me going, "We've effing won the game. We've stuck it up him."
Just backtracking a quarter or so, the streaker obviously was strutting around the third quarter. I can seem to recall her in the centre square. You would have been fairly close to that.
Tony, I was in the forward pocket on the Ponsford side, and I was with Merv Kane. He was actually strangling me, and I'm sort of trying to strangle him. He's a bit bigger than me, and he's going, "I'm going to get you, you little bastard," you know. And there was screaming. And I'm thinking, well, they're not screaming at us, are they? And I've turned around and I've seen this nude girl, and I've said to Merv, "There's a streaker out there." And he goes, "What are you talking about?" So we've stopped choking each other and we've run over to the centre square to watch this streaker running around.
It was an incredible moment. And of course, it actually halted Carlton's run. The team had a bit of a run on there at that time. So in retrospect, it might have been damaging, you know, to... as Carlton was starting to make real inroads on Richmond,
yeah.
But she actually ran on.
Yeah. But at the end, we won.
It's all that matters. Now, Alex, 83... Oh, before I get to 83 and 84, 5, the three premierships, do you have a favourite?
No. Tony, to me, like, 79, sorry, was fantastic because it was the first one, and 81 was fantastic because there was a second, and 82 was fantastic because it was a third. And when people say to you, "How many premierships?" You know, like a lot of people don't probably remember now. When they say, "Oh, did you ever play in a premiership?" I said, "Yeah, three." And it really knocks them about. There was not one that was any better than the other. To me, they were all magnificent.
Neil, do you relate the story? Is it you that relates a story about seeing Wayne Harms in the Hilton across the road after the 79 grand final and catching his eye and he held up one finger? And then 12 months later, you saw him there again. He held up two figures. And then 3 years later, you see him again. He holds up three. Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that. No.
Might not be you. It's a good story.
It's a good story. It is a good story.
Now, we're talking the period 83 through 85. The team didn't get to the ultimate in those particular years, although it finished in the final series. What happened in those years? Do you recall that didn't allow the team to go all the way?
Oh, Tony, that's... Yeah, there was an influx of new players. I think the footy, you know, like there was guys like Sefta, Southby retired. A lot of guys retired. New guys came in. The mix probably wasn't probably as good as it should have been. Who knows? Yeah, it's just the different makeup of players. We were getting older, mentally probably we weren't as
switched on,
eager, hungry. Who knows? Unfortunately, it probably does happen, you know.
And hearing you say that, you come to realise even more how hard they are to win because everything has to be in place, doesn't it?
Tony, like, you know, even now I drive around and I think to myself, my God, I've played in three premierships. Yeah, you know, people, you know, players are busting to play in one. And I was lucky enough to play in three with a great side like the Carlton Football Club. Mate, it's fantastic.
Now, 85 was a tough year for you because you were starting to break down with a succession of soft tissue injuries. But you also, I think, sustained the two broken jaws through that season.
Yeah.
What happened there? And, I mean, how badly did that set back your career?
Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah. 6 weeks I was out with one of them. It was I got plates and everything in there. It knocks it back a lot. The other thing too, I think, Tony, is coaches start to look at you in different ways too. You know, you've been there a while. They're probably thinking, you know, he's probably not doing, like Parker used to call me, the shadow of yourself. You know, he thought I wasn't doing the hard yards. He was probably right. It's just the different view and beliefs. You know, we weren't probably winning as many games. Parker or the coaching staff was trying to, you know, get new blood into the side. So that doesn't help either. And then Wolsey took over in 86, sorry. I had a huge run of bad injuries, stomach muscles and everything. I missed about 13 games. So that doesn't help either.
I do remember, though, David Parkin leaping to your defence after that. I think it might have been the second broken jaw, and saying, well, look, we think we've got a fellow here that's been targeted. Did you feel that?
Yeah. Look, I wasn't a big stature bloke. I used to cop it a bit, yeah.
Yeah. All these years on, are there any sort of side effects from having that?
And no.
I mean, concussion's obviously a big issue in the game today, much talked about and a contentious issue. Did you suffer a lot at the time or since because of the head rise you received?
No.
So you've pretty much got out of the game unscathed.
Tony, pretty much like I ran this morning, I ran about 8Ks this morning, which I bless, my body for that. A lot of guys can't. They've got knee replacements, ankle replacements, hip replacements. I run in the mornings. Yeah, every second morning.
So
I enjoy it.
You still look back and pinch your cheeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you've got every right to. We're getting towards the end, Alex, but looking back on it now, are there any regrets at all, looking back on your career at Carlton? Anything that you didn't achieve or would have liked to have achieved?
Any regrets? I should never have left Carlton. I'm not joking. That's probably my biggest regret.
You went to St Kilda. You had two seasons there.
Yeah.
What happened there? Why did you go? Was it of your calling or were you sent there?
No. Colo basically said, look, we're not letting you go, but we want to give a few younger guys, Bear Gleeson, Adrian Gleeson, a couple of younger guys a go. It's not going to be as easy, Al. So if you have got a club in mind you want to go to, or we're not going to stop you. I'm not saying we don't want you to go, but we're not going to stop you either. And Kenny Sheldon was given the same sort of marching orders in a way. And he's rung me and said, oh, stuff it. We'll go to St Kilda. Macca's there. Peter McConville's there. Wow's there. We'll all get down there. And Spiro was there. We'll go there and never go there. And as soon as I got there, I thought to myself, oh, my God, what am I doing here? Guys, that was, oh, my God, the worst. Yeah, seriously, to talk about chalk and cheese and professionalism and amateurism, that was...
Amateur hour, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievably.
So you, in retrospect, you could have stayed. If it was down to you, which it was, you would have stayed on...
Yeah.
Finished out your career here.
Yeah, I would have stayed. I would have been happy to play in the twos. Not that I believe I would have played twos, but I would have been happy to. Yeah, but, peer group pressure, the guys I played premierships with, I thought, yeah, I'll go down there and give it a whack. My dad was devastated. He goes, what the hell are you doing? He never came to watch me at once play at St Kilda, ever.
I can understand that.
Yeah, I can understand that too.
In closing, Alex, look, it's been a magnificent career, and we've talked about right place, right time, and what might have been had Serge Silvani not stood up for you or Chris Pavlo before him. Looking back now and the fact you're still involved with Carlton, what does it actually mean to you to be part of Carlton? What's the club meant to you?
Well, it's meant three premierships. It's meant a lifelong friends, like the guys I played with, from the Perovics to the Dooleys. We still see each other a lot of time. We're all going down to a lot of us are going to the Launceston Cup in a couple of weeks. This club, the history of it, the success, it's, for that lean period in the 2000s, it's the greatest club in the AFL, I believe. And I just love going to the games. I love watching it. Love meeting guys like yourself. It's fantastic.
Alex, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today and hear you reminisce about those great days and what was clearly a great moment in Carlton's illustrious history. The great thing is that you're still involved and you still have the passion for the place. We look forward to seeing you around for a lot longer to come. But for the moment, thanks very much for sharing your recollections. It's been fantastic to hear.
Pleasure, man. No worries, Dan. Thanks, man.
You can follow Tony DeBolfo on Twitter @CFC_DeBolfo.